Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled April 19th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed one item of anticipated litigation, one personnel item, and we conferred with our labor negotiators regarding negotiations. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. We have one set of minutes to approve, the minutes of April 5th.
I'll second.
Okay, so I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Quessenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I need to abstain.
Okay, so we have six ayes and one abstention by Mr. Unger. Student representatives to the board. We'll start with Nick Nelms from Morobay High School.
Hello, hope you guys all had a good weekend. Just before the weekend, we had a nice school play, and we actually pulled in a lot of tickets, a lot of revenue for that. And tomorrow night, we are going to have our academic awards night, nice dessert with that. And our prom is coming up this Saturday. A lot of kids are excited for that. It's galaxy-themed, kind of because of the new Star Wars. And it's going to be out at Tascadero on the lake. And I actually talked to a couple kids that came back from Ryla this last weekend, and it was sponsored through the Rotary, and MBHS sent six kids, and it was Thursday through Sunday, and they had like guest speakers, a lot of productive, engaging activities, and they said that it was like very wholesome and engaging and productive and really helped them, they thought, grow as an individual and also help in group activities. And another leadership thing that we are doing is FFA is sending their FFA officers to the state conference this weekend, so we'll see how that goes. And Avid is having their college trip on Thursday and Friday as well, so hopefully they'll have fun with that. And on the subject of sports, our volleyball team is doing super well. They're actually playing Templeton, our rivals, today, so we'll see how that goes. A lot of them are really pumped up. I wish I got to see that game, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. And then wrestling is hosting a drive-in barbecue on the 25th. Sounds pretty fun. And we are having women come and present about engineering and their role in that, and just trying to raise awareness on women in that field. And that's about all we have going on, Morobay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hello.
Excuse me, Bellum. Nick, so the drive-thru barbecue, the barbecue is at Morobay High School. We drive through Morobay.
No.
No.
Whoa!
That's your English.
Be around the back of the science.
I do not have all the information on that actually, because.
Yeah, it is. It's a grill hut.
Grill hut.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Okay, Bella Stenball from San Luis Obispo High School.
So we have a lot going on at San Luis Obispo High School right now. On Sunday, we have our Black and Gold Boosters fundraiser. It's a golf fundraiser. Black and Gold Boosters supports everything except for athletics because that's slow tab. So they send people to conferences. They support the arts. They support the academics. They're a very big organization at our school. So we're very excited to help out at that fundraiser. We're also running our ASB elections right now for next year, which is very exciting, which means that someone else will be sitting here, which is bizarre, but it will be great. We have eight people running for executive council, which are the four head positions for ASB, so it's really cool. We have a really good group, so that's exciting. We had our Tiger Fest last week, which is our open house. All the teachers are there, all the clubs are represented, all the eighth graders and their parents come and hear from current students about Slo High, it gives them sort of an idea of what they can join as far as clubs and extracurriculars when they come on campus. So that was a very successful event. We have Guys and Dolls running. Our drama department is putting that on right now. It's one of the first productions we run in our outside quad area. So they have a double cast because so many kids are involved in drama, and they've been really successful so far. So it's our last week of shows. Our Slow Bet Science team were champions of the Clovis Invitational, which is very fun. And we also have students heading to the FFA State Conference. Our Color Run is next weekend, which is a big part of Slow High's traditions starting about 4 years ago. So it's a fundraiser for the Alex Mayer Memorial Scholarship. It's happening this Saturday, the 23rd, at around 9 a.m., I believe, and you can sign up online. So that's a very good cause to join in on, and that's something that all of our students are very excited for. And that same day, we have our Slow Cella Spring Dance, which is our big spring dance of the season. It's outside. We have students who do like live performances before the actual DJ comes on campus. So that's an event that's very casual that everyone really looks forward to every year. So ASB has been working on that. We had 4 student athletes commit to collegiate level sports, to LaSalle, Cal State Monterey Bay, U.S. Merchant Marine Academy, and Pomona Pitzer for baseball and dive. Those were the 2 sports that those 4 gentlemen got to commit to. So that was very exciting. They had a big signing day where their parents came and they committed and put on their hats. So that was very fun. Our baseball team is 8-0 in the Pac-8 League. Track won the Bill Kearney invite last weekend. We have an open mic that's running next Friday. And then last week, we had our Mental Health Awareness Week. It's just something that I told you guys before it happened. We had a resource fair where we had 10 different organizations come on campus. That was super successful. We were sort of hesitant on how students would approach it, but we had a lot of student participation. They really got a lot out of it. The organization said they would love to come back on campus next year because of the student involvement, and they really felt like they got something out of coming and taking the time to be there. We also had videos running every day, one of which that was student made that I'll show you in a second. It's like a little 30-second clip. And also what was really important is that we told teachers on that Wednesday of that week that we really would encourage them to take about 5 minutes of their class time and just talk to their students about their own experiences with mental health, dealing with stress, issues in their life, just the idea of mental health and positive mental health as a whole. And the response from teachers and students was absolutely amazing. We had some teachers who felt so passionately about it that they spent the entire class period talking to their students and having full-on discussions about the stigma behind mental health and why it's really important for us to have these conversations in schools. And honestly, the idea that now with these 8 executive council members running for next year and the fact that every single one of their speeches included something about mental health for students, I think that our ASB has created a really good start for making sure that this is a lasting subject matter that we acknowledge as a school because we decided that it was very important. So I'll let Ms. Holmes play the video.
Mental illness, addiction, and self-injury under the rug.
The vision is that for the first time, conversations are being started.
The vision is that everyone comes together as a community, stands together in support of one another.
The vision is how we can help us alive.
The vision is love.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Bella. As always, you're welcome to stay. Contribute to the meeting if you'd like. If you have other things you need to get done, we understand. And You may take your leave at any time. With our thanks for coming.
Madam President, I just want to apologize to Walter and to Nick for my outburst. It's something that I've always told my students, just because you think something, you don't always have to say it, so I apologize.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, we have the Los Osos Middle School Robotics Team, which will be, if I can get it up here, Mr. Alstadt, are you? Look at this. I cannot get this to come off of LCAP. Oh, maybe there's not. There's
something there. Okay. Hi, my name is Matt Robinette, and I am the... Oh, not ready.
No, whoop, I called you Mr. Alstadt, and I apologize. I knew you looked very familiar to me.
may have a striking resemblance to someone up there at the panel.
To someone I know who shall remain nameless.
All right, so I'm the math and STEAM teacher here at Los Osos Middle School, and during the first semester I taught a robotics class, and the three young gentlemen standing to my right were the cream of the crop. They are amazing young engineers. They built a robot that took them all the way to the state championship, and so they are here to tell you about their experience.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Kyle.
I'm Bed.
And I'm Doug.
And we are the Los Osos Middle School Robotics Team. So here you can see is our robot. We built that in our robotics class, and we started out with six different teams, including us, and we were given a VexIQ robotics kit and the resources so we could read all the rules on the competition and a video where we can watch the competition and the challenge, get more information on that.
Like Mr. Robinette said, it's a class, so every day in our Loam's Makerspace, we would write down daily goals in our notebooks, and at the end of the day, we'd write down achievements of what we did. And using the system, everybody in the team was always caught up and nobody was left behind. So it was a great way to ensure our robot was worked on by everybody.
We also had weekly goals, well, long-term goal, not always weekly. So we knew what our end goal for the robot was. And when we first got all of our information, our whole VexIQ robotics kit, we brainstormed as a team, and we came up with different ideas on how to complete a task. And right now, Doug will tell you about the challenge.
So,
so
the challenge was that we had to... take the ball, orange balls, and try and use our conveyor belt to take the balls up to the flywheels, which will spin and shoot the balls into the basket. And if we miss, we'll get into the scoring zone. And after that, after we usually get three or four balls in there, we will go and go up the ramp, knock almost all the balls off, and sometimes all the balls, and park on the ramp to get 10 points.
Okay. So when we got all our ideas together, we had that design, and each of us worked on a different part of it. We divided and conquered. So my main part of the robot is the conveyor, or the elevator. That's what gets the balls up to the flywheel.
Which is my design, and it's using like a gear ratio, which makes the wheel spin faster. So imagine like a tennis pitcher shooting balls out to a tennis player. It's kind of like that, but just shooting them into the bin to score us points. And Doug will explain what he did for the robot.
What I did for the robot was I mainly did the structure and part of the Omni wheel.
And Doug forgot to mention, he made the program for our programming skills challenge, and it was actually so good. We actually won the competition for programming in our first event. So, very well.
So at our first competition, there were about 20 teams, including us, and we worked together with the other teams to score as many points as possible. In this competition, we came in first place and brought home 3 awards and also the opportunity to go to the state championships in Pasadena.
We were not expecting this. We went to the competition for fun, to get the experience, and to see some other really cool robots, and we were just really proud of ourselves that we did so well.
And at the state championships in Pasadena, we came in 5th place along with another team. And overall, it was a great experience. We had lots of fun, and we learned so much.
So now we'll explain, or would you guys like to see a demo?
Yes. Yeah. Okay,
So in a normal robot run, we would first start by Ved going around the board, picking up all those balls, and it's actually pretty difficult because there are pieces sticking up out of the board to keep the balls in place, and that way it was kind of difficult to pick him up at first, but we got the hang of it. And after he gets all the balls, he would drive up to the bin, and we'd switch controllers.
And Kyle has the balls ready to shoot. He'll start the flywheel and open this mechanism we have to shoot it in. Yeah, even if we miss, it's okay because, as Doug explained before, there's usually a fence scoring zone right here. So if you make it over that, you get 1 point, but if you make it here, you get 3. So even if we miss, you still get 1. So. Do you guys have any questions?
Yeah, that's tremendous. Does anyone, Mr. Millar?
So you were given the task for the overall competition, including state, and then you guys figured out how to use the kit to accomplish the task.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, very, very impressive.
Thank you.
Cal Poly, next stop. All right.
Madam President?
Who do I see? I see Mr. Buckman.
Hi.
And then Mr. Quesenberry.
Thanks. So I have 2 quick questions. One, that remote control looks a lot like the first video game controller I ever... Did you have to construct that, or did it come with your... come complete?
It came with the kit, but we had to program it to interact with the robot.
Okay, please, go ahead.
No, it's fine.
Thank you. And then the second thing is, so did all the robots end up looking like this, or did you just have a bunch of pieces and you got to make it look like...
We got a bunch of pieces from a kit. They look kind of like Legos, and we had to assemble it in our own way.
So were there some fairly bizarre-looking things?
Yeah. Like, one robot at the competition would pick up, like, 20 or so, like, move them over, and they'd all fall into the basket.
Thank you.
Are you good? Okay. Well, gentlemen, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for sharing with us. And Mr. Robinette.
Just one quick question. Is the robot for sale? I don't know. Some things around my house, I think.
We can't afford it, right? One for your underwear. Is that
what you're saying? Okay, moving on. We have correspondence. At the time the agenda was printed, there had been no correspondence received. Subsequently, has anyone received any correspondence? Okay. The next item is public comment. I don't believe we've received any requests to speak. Is there anyone in the public that would like to address the board during public comment? Well, seeing no one, we'll move on. Superintendent's updates. The business and budget update, are we going to pass on that for this evening?
Yeah, I just would like to acknowledge that Mr. Pinkerton is in the city of Morro Bay representing our district at the Planning Commission meeting as they discuss the Morro Bay pool project. So I wanted you to be aware of that. He should be here later on this evening. But in terms of our presentations tonight for superintendent's update, We have a lengthy board meeting, and I think we'll forego the other two items.
He has definitely has an excused absence. So shall we forego then 7.1, 2, and 3? Okay. Moving on then to item 8.01, presentation and adoption of next generation science standards. I am just stuck.
Good evening. I'm here with Tristan Shorba, our science teacher on special assignment, to talk to you about the next generation science standards. So we've done a lot over the last few years around math and the English language arts related to Common Core. So kind of our next big change when it comes to standards is in science. So we are happy to present to you some information on the major shifts that you see within science. And then at the end, I will wrap up with a summary. And we'll also ask that you adopt the next generation science standards for our district at the end. So we'll hand it over to Tristan.
All right, good evening. Thank you for having me. So in 2013, the state of California adopted new science standards known as the Next Generation Science Standards, or NGSS. These standards represent a dramatic shift in science education, focusing much more on how science and engineering happens in the real world, as opposed to students understanding specific facts or concepts or ideas in isolation, really understanding how these work and are reflected in the real world. This is reflected on how the standards themselves are written as performance expectations. So it's not so much what students know or understand about the science, but what students can do and how they can apply their understanding. So we're looking at a real depth of knowledge as opposed to a breadth with a very little depth. Another piece that's kind of new here is very much like the Common Core, these standards build coherently from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade. So we see a focus on the importance of science education at all grade levels. Another new thing with these standards is the emphasis of engineering in addition to the science. So what we will be seeing is engineering focus in all of our science courses and curriculum, kindergarten all the way through high school. Another piece here, too, is that these standards, just like Common Core, are designed to prepare our students for college and career readiness, as well as developing them into scientifically literate citizens. Finally, these standards correlate really nicely with the Common Core math and ELA standards. And we can see, maybe we can see, there we go. We can see in this Venn diagram here, and the big takeaway for this Venn diagram is really seeing the overlap. These represent the math Common Core practices, the ELA Common Core standards, and the NGSS science practices. And what we're seeing here is a lot of overlap, a lot of coordination, a lot of integration in terms of our expectations and requirements for our students. And the beauty, I feel like, this represents is that we're moving in the same direction through multiple subjects and disciplines. What you can see here on this slide is the movement from the old 1998 science standards format to the performance expectation, where the kind of the old standard was that students use and are able to solve mathematical problems regarding wave characteristics and properties, moving to the performance expectation with the NGSS, and that students are still expected to be able to use the math and understand the wave characteristics and properties, but that they use that now as evidence to support claims that they make. And so focusing again on that depth and application of science understanding and knowledge. What we see in the performance expectations too are what are called the three dimensions of the NGSS. And every performance expectation has all three of these dimensions. And so the first dimension of the NGSS are known as the science and engineering practices. These focus on what scientists and engineers do. Scientists and engineers ask questions, they define problems, they conduct and plan investigations, and so on. The second dimension of the NGSS are the disciplinary core ideas. And really, this is what scientists and engineers know. And really, this used to be the focus of the science standards before the NGSS. This used to be the standards. Now it's a piece or a part of the curriculum. We expect students and teachers to develop an understanding of all three dimensions. And so the organization here is regards to life science, physical science, earth space, and the engineering technology. But to recognize, especially at the high school level, this does not have to be the organization of our courses, that we can break these up and reassemble them into the course offerings, especially at the high school level, based on our district needs and preferences and goals. The third and final dimension are the cross-cutting concepts, and these reflect how scientists and engineers think, that they think in terms of patterns of cause and effect, scale, proportion, and quantity, and so on. And really, what this means for our students, when we take these three dimensions and put them together, our students will be starting to be thinking like scientists and engineers, actively participating and doing what scientists and engineers do, and understanding the base knowledge and foundational understanding of what scientists and engineers know. We do expect a new assessment from the state of California being operational in the year 2018-19, so we do have a little bit of time. We are still administering, according to state mandate, the old CST science test. We'll be doing that this current spring and then next spring, and then that's going away with the new NGSS field test and operational test. A couple things to note about this new assessment is this will be given to grades 5, 8, and sometime in high school. The state has been very vague about that high school test grade level. And so, of course, as we have more information, we'll be letting you know and updating you as we know. Big thing to note, though, is that previous state assessments were grade level specific. These are now grade band tests, meaning that the fifth grade test encompasses standards from kindergarten through fifth grade. Eighth grade test, grade 6, 7, and 8, and the high school test, whenever that is, all the high school performance expectations. And so, again, an emphasis on science at all grade levels. Okay, so what we've been working on at the secondary level, we've been really busy this year. We've been really focusing on deepening our understanding, there we go, of our teachers' understanding of the new standards. We've been sending them to, I'm having some technical difficulties, but it's okay, sending them to conferences and workshops, having some pull-out days to deepen understanding, try some new inquiry-based instructional models that allow more student exploration and having students build more understanding and teacher facilitating. We've been identifying and evaluating the resources that we have and looking at into the future, what needs will we need to address. And then we've also begun working with the Early Implementer Initiative with the state of California. The Early Implementer Initiative in the state began in 2014. There are 10 districts in the state of California that are part of this initiative, and they're meant to kind of be the test pilots, the districts that are blazing the trail for the rest of the state. And we've begun visiting those districts, talking to those districts, modeling a lot of what they're doing for professional learning and application implementation here in our district, and we will continue to build and do that. And our secondary steering committee has been meeting for strategic planning and priorities and goal setting as well. Where we're headed with secondary science is we're going to continue a lot of what we've been doing because it's a multi-year transition implementation for us, and we still have time before the state assessment. So we'll continue deepening understanding of the shifts, providing more professional learning with pull-out days for teachers, meeting during TCT times. Our teachers have been and will continue work on collaborative unit planning. We've already actually also begun including some teachers outside the district to kind of expand the influence in some ways of our district, but also just more expertise and collaboration even within the county. We'll continue working with the early implementers and, again, hope to build on our relationship with them and build our more of a robust teacher leadership team at the secondary level and continue updating and identifying our equipment and materials needs. At the secondary level, we've been busy also. Their steering committee has been meeting to understand the changes and to set direction for the elementary grades, also visiting some model programs and learning from their challenges and successes. We have been looking at a FOSS update. FOSS has a NGSS version of their curriculum. And after doing some test driving of that curriculum in certain classrooms with some very much teacher and student positive enthusiasm. Our steering committee a few nights ago did recommend to update our FOSS curriculum to the FOSS NGSS, and we're looking right now to potentially start that in January of next year and have a multi-year rollout for that in terms of updating that curriculum for our teachers. What we've been finding is that our teachers at the elementary level, all, across all grade levels, but at the elementary level too, have been trying NGSS, and so to get them good instructive curricular support has been a need for them. We've also offered voluntary professional learning for our elementary teachers back in January Staff Development Day. It was very well attended and well received. And we're offering a summer science camp for elementary teachers in June in conjunction with Cal Poly. All right, so challenges. We're moving towards new standards, but we're being assessed on an old state test. So that's kind of funky. The State Board of Education recognized that too. The sixth grade teachers in San Luis Obispo City, they've just been participating in a voluntary kind of professional learning and implementation. But sixth grade is part of middle school in terms of these standards now. And so our plan is right now is to pilot certain things, certain units at Los Osos Middle School sixth grade and refine them and slowly roll those out to our city sixth grade teachers and provide them a multi-year transition as well with support with the curriculum and with the equipment. With our high school scope, again, we have the two-year science requirement. And again, I have no new information, unfortunately, to share with you, but again, still curricular models from the state always point to a minimum of 3 years. But beyond that, I can't provide you with more information. And of course, as we know, with all these changes in K-12 education, we know that change takes time. Change is not an event, but change is a process, and we're in this change process right now in science.
All right, so our final summary piece here. As Tristan mentioned, there is a shift in these standards. So the major shift is from a knowledge base to more of an application, which probably sounds familiar to you, right? Similar to that Common Core shift. There is a K-12 progression of ideas and skills. So as Tristan mentioned, some of the FOSS transitions that they're working on in elementary, and that kind of leads into what students will need for middle school and high school. The next one is that we have a new test, right, expected for 2018-19. So as we know in Common Core, when you have major shifts like that, we're, you know, leading that direction in science as well, which causes a lot of shifts and for us to process what that's going to mean for us. We are working collaboratively. Tristan's doing an amazing job of really pulling teachers together, keeping teachers aligned with working towards this in a collaborative manner. So there's a lot of teachers that have their heads in this that are really engaged and excited about this change and working together towards that implementation. So finally, the State Board has adopted Next Generation Science Standards for the state, and so tonight I would recommend a formal board adoption of the Next Generation Science Standards for San Luis Coastal. A couple things just to keep in mind that allows us to do is, for one, to move forward with the implementation. Your formal adoption kind of helps with a formalization of that process, as well as there are other times when grant opportunities and other things open up when they often ask, have you formally adopted this? So that would be helpful to us as well. And Tristan and I are here, of course, for any questions.
Okay, Mr. Buckman.
Public. Kimberly did answer these. I'm sorry, Kim answered these. Ms. McGrath answered these for me. I had sent them in earlier, but I thought the answers were so good. I asked them again. So as I went through with the disciplinary core ideas and what scientists and engineers need to know, there was life sciences, the things we listed, but some of the things that I expected or what I did or didn't do well in high school was chemistry. And I wondered how that fit in, and then I was thinking about the medical career pathway, and then what's the link between these and pathways, the career pathways that we're talking about. So.
Great. I'll let Tristan jump in to discuss the details of the core ideas a little.
Thanks.
So absolutely. So what we would see for a chemistry class is that would be under the physical science primary core idea, and really physics and chemistry are both physical sciences, and so those would generally be broken up between those two courses, again, because this is not curriculum. This is, you know, guidance and standards that we can organize these in our high school courses however we want to. So right now we're seeing like our integrated science course has a lot of the earth and space with some physical science. Biology basically has all the life science, and then there's a kind of a broken up more of the physical science in the chemistry and physics right now. But, you know, because of the local control, we have, you know, a lot of autonomy in what those look like for our science course offerings at the high school.
So just to summarize from what I'm hearing and what I read earlier, if we want to approach one of these through chemistry, then that's a school district option. Okay, that's
correct.
That sounds pretty good.
Correct. And in terms of your question about the medical pathways, too, there are pre-approved Area D science courses that that are pre-approved by the UCCI organization, and there are NGSS-aligned classes that are on that list. That if we want to offer those pathways, you know, there's other logistical pieces to that, but absolutely, I think that should be a piece in our conversation of this for sure. High school.
Okay, I'm reminded to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one then, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Could you to just generally describe the situation with textbooks and curricular material as we make this transition?
Sure. I can jump in and say there are not any textbook kind of materials aligned to it or available yet, although they begin to show up, and unfortunately kind of it comes a little bit later. But sometimes often what we find too is that the textbook can be a start and can be a base and a foundation, but that it also has to align with exactly what you choose. So sometimes that can be a base and a start, but teachers often need other materials to support that. So.
And when these texts are available, will it go through the normal text adoption process? And
it
which
would.
I believe takes a while.
It would.
Okay.
Yeah, it would. With secondary, it is you know, not quite the same time commitment that elementary has, but yes, there would be the same review process and you know, a committee process to formally adopt.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Sheffer.
Do I need this? So as we go through this process, is there and change our existing courses to accommodate the NGSS, will there be any sort of additional or new approval process for age A through G?
Right, so A through G applies to the high school courses, so
right.
It could be that as we are looking at high school courses that are available, it could be that we need to submit those courses. So let's say, for example, the integrated science course that we did last year. Remember how we had a ninth grade required integrated science course that was not A to G. So we said, while we're going ahead and submit that for A to G approval, let's go ahead and look at the next gen science standard shifts, and let's see if we can begin to include that as well, so that we're not having to redo that work. So yes, it could mean that we are needing to reapply for approval of those. And then the other thing that could be exciting is kind of that integrated, those courses that could have some CTE integration. As Mark mentioned, that could be an exciting piece of something that's, you know, a little out of the box and different. And we'll work with teachers to look at which ones their credentials allow and which ones they were, you know, be excited to teach that could cover CTE standards as well as science standards.
So it might give us, open up some opportunities to have some A through G CTE classes.
Yeah,
see how many,
absolutely.
How many letters I
right,
can put
exactly.
out at one time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mr. Quesenberry.
This is sort of a nuts and bolts question. With the new generation science standards, we don't know what the assessments are going to look like and so forth. Do we? No, that's down the road quite a way. But with the current California state testing, are they still doing it like domain specific or subject specific? My understanding is it's going to go to the 11th grade, right? They're going to have an assessment.
Yeah.
Do we know what that's going to
be? Unfortunately. So far we know 5th and 8th, and then they haven't quite answered about high school. We're kind of guessing 11th, because that's where the other English and math testing is going on, but they have not formally stated that yet. We're also kind of assuming that it's going to be something similar to Common Core, you know, related SBAC testing, because you can see a similar shift, right? So it's gone from more knowledge-based to more application. So we're assuming the test, you know, might follow the same type of pattern, but no, we haven't seen concrete answers to that yet.
So for high school students right now, this year, next year, are the tests that they're taking, again, subject or domain specific, or?
Mm-hmm. So currently in high school, you have a 10th grade life science test, right?
Okay.
That is not specific to their course. So they might be in biology or chemistry, and I'm a 10th grader, I take a life science test.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I just have to say, excellent use of the Venn diagram. It really, really summed up the interdisciplinary approach that we're taking here. And it makes me wonder whether we're even going to need textbooks as we start to pull from various disciplines. And, you know, I think we've all experienced, take out your math book, do your math, take out, you know, put that away, take out your science book, take your science. So at some point, do you even envision that our students will be working with their English language arts and their math and their science, and they'll be Googling things online, and maybe we don't even need these textbooks?
Yeah, I think we'll kind of see what they come up with, right? I mean, I think it's, unfortunately, we're a little bit in a wait and see. You know, it can be a great support for a teacher to not have to pull and create materials and come up with things. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, I can picture at middle schools and other things where we have more of an integrated model and there's lots of supports from different directions. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with.
Very exciting. Thank you.
Can I just reiterate something? Mr. Shorba mentioned it, but I think one of the things that will be in front of the board probably sooner than later has to do with high school science and the current two-year requirement. Almost everything that I see in the NGSS points to 3 years of science in high school. And we currently have a two-year science requirement, which de facto probably means certain students with that requirement will not be as prepared for that test. And so that is something, you know, we're not ready to make some recommendation or change because we had their staffing implications and implications across that high school world. But it'll be certainly something that the department will be grappling with and working with teachers to figure out whether or not we do bring some recommendation for a three-year science requirement and what those classes might be that are required. And that is still to be determined.
Okay. Mrs. Sheffer.
If there was no other discussion, I was going to make a motion to adopt the next generation science standards as presented this evening.
I'll second.
So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Your parents has a nice boot to it, though.
Early intervention progress update. Mrs. Shields.
Good evening. It is my pleasure to introduce early literacy and early intervention teacher specialist, Mary Zurm, who's going to be sharing with you, first of all, end-of-year data from our early literacy interventions from the 2014-15 school year, and then current data on our students involved and taking part in early literacy interventions. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mary.
Hi there. Thanks for the opportunity for me to come and share the current early literacy work that's happening in our district. Tonight, our presentation is twofold. As Amy mentioned, first we'll report on the outcome of the students who benefited from early literacy intervention during the 2014-2015 school year, and then second, update you on the current status of our early literacy interventions for this school year. We'll review the data for both reading recovery and our one-to-one reading intervention for first graders and LLI, the small group intervention that also supports our early readers and writers. Let's see. Whoops, went too far. So this year finds us transitioning away from individualized instruction to increased small group instruction for students requiring additional support in the areas of reading and writing. While our delivery model is changing, our goal remains the same. Identify the students who need extra support early and provide them with the best early intervention possible to close the achievement gap quickly and early. So let's take a look at what's been happening with reading recovery and DLL. During 2014-2015, we were able to provide reading recovery or DLL intervention at all nine of our elementary schools. Remember, DLL, which is Descubriendo la Lectora, is the Spanish version of reading recovery that's used with our Spanish readers at Pacheco. 131 students, or 24% of our first graders, benefited from one-on-one intensive intervention, with 24% of our first graders being served. Last year, we had 5 new teachers who were trained in reading recovery, and we had 13 continuing teachers who participated in professional development and continued to teach our students. Of those 131 students last year, 77 of them completed their programs either by discontinuing, indicating that they no longer needed intensive services, or by completing a full 20 weeks of lessons and being recommended for continued instructional support. And that would have either been a referral to their IEP team or to LLI small group intervention, because they still needed continued support. They didn't need that one-on-one support. Of the 54 remaining students, 51 ended the year with an incomplete status, indicating that we ran out of time before the student either met their grade level expectations or had 20 weeks of lessons. This year sees the beginning of our transition from reading recovery to LLI services. We have 10 teachers who continue to use reading recovery best practices to provide one-on-one instruction with our first graders. And we anticipate a similar level of support as we move into the 2016-2017 school year. Early intervention continues to be a part of our local control accountability plan. And as you'll notice here, we have a large percentage of our students being served this year from our LCAP target populations. Now let's take a look at what's been happening in LLI. LLI is also a comprehensive research-based reading and writing program appropriate for students who need support in addition to the classroom literacy program. Students for LLI are selected for LLI based upon assessment data that ensures that the most struggling students in a grade level are provided services first. There's a little bug flying around. I know, it's like, yeah. 468 at-risk students received LLI services during the 2014-2015 school year, so that would be the bottom graph here. This little pointer's not working. 197 of these students made adequate acceleration to meet the end-of-year BAS benchmark. If we compare the last 2 years of data, so the top is 2013-2014 and the bottom is 2014-2015, it shows that there was a significant increase in the percentage of students who met end-of-year proficiency levels last year. Results for both of the years show a higher success rate for at-risk readers in grades K through 3 than our students in grades 4 through 6. And I think as we think about kids moving up grade levels, when they're in those lower levels, we're looking at more of acceleration. And when we move kids higher up into the higher levels, it's more about remediation, where it's more difficult to sort out kids' complications and confusions. So two factors that could be responsible for the increase in students demonstrating the higher proficiency last year. It could be, first, a greater focus on fine-tuning instructional practices in LLI by our LLI teachers. That may have had an impact. In addition, our improved use of data to progress monitor allows our teachers to quickly identify those students who need services, as well as gives us information on what the needs are for individual students. So both of these factors could have contributed to the growth that we saw with our students last year. This year, 8 elementary sites received additional district funding for LLI. 4 teachers and 2 instructional coaches were trained. And as of April, we have 35 trained teachers who have served 431 students. Some of the sites increased the number of students they served through LLI, while other sites stayed about the same and used site funds previously allocated for LLI for other classroom supports and interventions. We also saw sites keeping students in LLI longer because it was working, but they needed more time, longer than the 20 weeks. And we had one school, C.L. Smith, that provided a variety of early intervention literacy programs, including LLI. Again, the data shows that LLI is targeting the goal of our local control accountability plan to meet the instructional needs of specific student populations.
Mm-hmm. So one of the questions I had when I got to these subgroup charts, so are these non-duplicated numbers when we look at especially SED? It's a lot of kids. Hi, Amy.
Hi. No, these are overlap.
They are.
They absolutely okay. Overlap, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
So beginning this fall, the team in ISLA expanded the district's early literacy plan by coordinating data cycle conversations around literacy data. And this is an example of some of the data we looked at, and I'll share it with you in just a minute. But at the beginning of the year and at the end of each of our trimesters, the principals and instructional coaches spent time intentionally reviewing the K-2 report card data to guide their work in selecting and monitoring students for intervention. And this work has provided support for our school-based literacy teams as we move towards more of a site-based early intervention model. Okay, so if you look at this, this is some of the data that we used, in fact, last week with the principals. And each trimester, we've been able to use Illuminate to gather the report card data. So if you look across, sorry, this pointer isn't working. If you look across the very top, those would be all different reading and writing literacy tasks that the students, that we would be grading students on their report cards. If you see threes up there, those are places where students have met the standards. Two would be approaching, and one would be not yet. So we could use this data in several different ways. We could look at it if we wanted to look at how a grade level was doing. We could be looking down on each of those different areas so that we could, if you saw an area where it was all threes, we could say, wow, that's a place where the classroom is doing very well with meeting that standard. If we start looking horizontally, it starts helping us identify students, individual students. So the very top student who is in yellow, the yellow line there, is a student who is at risk. We're seeing a student who has lots of twos and they're not meeting benchmarks on the BAS, but you also see if you go all the way to the far right, there's a date there. That's the date that they entered LLI. So we're seeing that student has an intervention in place. If we look at a student like the student in blue there, that student is meeting a lot of the benchmarks. If you go to the far right, there's an entry date, but then there's an exit date. So that was a student in kindergarten that started LLI in November, and in January they exited the student from the program because the student had made adequate progress. So this kind of data, to be able to use it at our school sites with our coaches and our classroom teachers and our intervention teachers, helps us have a better understanding of who are our students and what are their strengths and who are the students that we want to make sure and be focusing on, so we make sure that we don't have anyone missing or falling through the cracks with us. And here's some pictures of some of our principals at our last meeting when we had our literacy talk. So now we're going to take a minute and hear from one of our LLI teachers. This is Jenny Appel, who's the LLI teacher at Del Mar Elementary.
I am really passionate about the LLI program, for one, because it's a program where you can take kids from where they're at and carefully scaffold them and take them where they need to be. So, and the lessons are very well organized, the books are engaging, we have running records right there for us so that we don't need to create them, and you can carefully monitor and make goals for your students. Okay, here at Del Mar, along with other school sites, we're working with the hardest to reach kiddos, and we're able to bring them into the LLI group and meet their needs and scaffold them nicely so that there can be movement. Another thing we do here at Del Mar is the LLI team gets together and constantly looks at our students through data from the running record and anecdotal notes, and we look at when kids are ready to move on and when we need to move new kids into our group to ensure that no time is wasted.
Whoops, wait a minute. Thank you, Kim. Okay, here's what Marlee Schmidt, the principal at Los Ranchos Elementary, has to say about LLI at her school.
So we're talking about LLI today, and what a really great program it's been, and a great program for a couple reasons. One is that the LLI materials really address those foundational reading skills that totally align with the standards and align with the things that we're looking for in our report card and assessments. The lessons have this great predictable structure to them that really allow for that unpredictable learning for kids, because they can just slip right into it. They know what's expected of them. It has this routine and this structure. The time is really used, every minute is used well to go after the word work, the concepts about print, the familiar books, the new books, the instructional levels, the independent levels. The books have just a very high interest, and it mixes the nonfiction with the fictional books, so it gives a nice mix to the kids and addresses both those genres. Frequently, many of our kids are from the primary grades, and one of the great things about that is that a lot of our primary kids that are struggling readers, they still are having a hard time finding those just right books, and this gives them just a steady supply of books that are first at their instructional level, and then within days or weeks they become their independent level. So it gives them just a plethora of books for them to enjoy and read and feel very confident as readers. The other thing is it just totally aligns with our reading program. So it echoes what the kids are getting in their classroom and then for their pullout intervention. So it becomes a very seamless support for our readers, which you just can't ask for more for our struggling kids.
Thank you, Kim. So in closing, we're in a time of transition in San Luis Coastal in regard to early literacy intervention. However, we have a strong foundation in place that will continue to support our work through this change. First is our district philosophy towards early literacy. We know it's important to identify and support at-risk students early to prevent a cycle of failure. Second, we have curriculum goals with the highest expectations for all students, with progress monitoring to ensure continued growth. And finally, we have research-based interventions like LLI available for students who are not yet meeting grade-level expectations. So building upon this foundation, it's possible to continue the district's long commitment to early literacy instructional practices. Thank you very much for your ongoing support of our early readers and writers. Any questions?
Mr. Buckman.
Did you want to go to the public first?
Oh, is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, then we'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
Sometimes I feel I should just go out and sit down.
I love that. I think I can name everybody in the audience tonight.
So I think this was there, and I have to tell you, I was really excited by the data and what's happening. It felt like, as I looked at it, I don't know if you have the information yet, that as we continue to focus on pre-K, TK, and K, it's my sense that the number of students that are going to need reading recovery is going to drop, but maybe also LLI. Is that It's an assumption I'm making, and I'm not an expert, so I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know that we have the data yet. But
we don't, but we do know that our BAS scores, our student achievement in kindergarten for second grade, have been steadily going up for the last 3-4 years. So we know we're seeing improvement.
And I think if we think about that commitment to early literacy, that if we can find those, you know, identify those students early, number one, provide a really good curriculum for them early on, but then identify those students early before that achievement gap gets too wide, and help them to sort out confusions that they have so that it doesn't develop into an ongoing kind of learning difficulty for students. So I think that focus on the earlier grades is really important.
Mr. Quisenberry.
She never calls on me. I'm really afraid of Walter.
Well, in good reason.
Go ahead, Jim. No, okay. I'm sure Meryl will get to me eventually.
First, I want to commend the people that are implementing these programs, because it's looking at the data and seeing that the number of students that need the interventions decreases to 5, at least from the list, in sixth grade, which I think is wonderful. You have a quizzical look on your face. No. Okay. But that's what am I misinterpreting the data?
I think so.
Was that the original number of students were in the program? Or? All right. I'm sorry. I'll have to go back to that page.
It would have been,
I saw the same 5 you saw, Jim.
Here.
5 or 6.
Yeah, so there were 5 students. Yeah.
No, I was misinterpreting what you were saying. You are absolutely correct. that there were 5 students. I think the reality, though, is we see less students being placed in an LLI intervention in upper grades, and also look at other types of interventions at that point in time, because we, after third grade, we know we see less success with it. So I would not venture to guess that we had only 3 children in sixth grade that needed. I don't think that would be accurate. I wish it was, but.
Okay, thank you. Well, that does help. And my next question was about the students that comes to our programs, you know, from another district. How do they figure into this whole mix? Let's say they enter at second grade or third grade.
Well, I think what would happen is any student coming into our district would go through assessment. We would be doing assessment with them and determining where they're falling, and if they need support, then we would want to be looking for that LLI or some other kind of intervention for them. So.
Okay, so there is an intervention program ready for them to fit into.
Every year, the teachers, the principal, the site looks at who are our clients this year.
Yeah, right.
So we absolutely don't start from where we left off. We take a look at new data. We take a look at needs. We take a look at resources at the school site, LLI being one of them, mm-hmm. and site resources being another. And as Mary, I don't think, gave herself enough credit, particularly for our early intervention, our early literacy piece, Mary has now developed a system with our principals and our coaches where she works with them at the beginning of the year, looking at end-of-year data. So that doesn't include new kids. But then they assess kids that come in. Then at the end of the first trimester, they look at the end of first trimester data, not only BAS scores, but how our young children did on foundational reading skills. She shares this data in a very, very detailed format and demonstrates for our principals how you might take this back to your site to use in a data cycle. So if I can go ahead and answer a question that came up, because I think it's really powerful as we're moving towards more of a site-based program. Our principals now take this data. They meet with their K-1-2 teachers. It's either done by the principal or the coach, or usually in a combination of two. They look a little bit more deeply. They talk about classroom instruction and what needs to be happening. They look at grouping of students in the classroom. They talk about interventions and what might happen. They also set up coaching cycles with particular classrooms where they might do ongoing running records, take a look at a group of students that they're concerned about, set a target for what they want to work on in the area of reading,
coach goes in, does some co-teaching, maybe does some model lesson, maybe they meet and reflect together. At the end of that cycle, then they're measuring growth for those students. So, but as you're hearing me say, this is more now back on the site. We're providing the information, we're supporting them in the thinking about it, and then they go back and do the specific work at site based on their students.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you, Madam President. I think I'm going through a little bit of mourning over recovery. Sorry, because I've watched it in action for a while, and so my question is, and I can't think of two better people to ask it of: are we identifying and supporting those early readers as well as we did under reading recovery in place?
I would answer that question no, but we're doing it more efficiently, and we're at the same time putting more onus back on our primary teachers to be the first line of defense. We aren't going to stand up here and compare anything to a one-on-one intervention that goes on for 20 weeks with a highly trained teacher. With that said, and with our changing economy and our changing economic needs of our district, I think Mary has led an amazing job in looking at a similar program, being the person in the lead in training those LLI teachers. In fact, another thing that happened this year that wasn't in place before is Mary's put an ongoing training piece for our LL teachers, so it's not just that training at the beginning, it's that continuing contact kind of concept. But to say a small group intervention is the same as a one-on-one is not the same. But it puts it back to that really sites getting to know their children's, thinking about what they need, not only in intervention, but in first instruction in the classroom.
Okay.
The other thing that I would add to it is that LLI, which is the intervention that is basically replacing reading recovery, was designed and authored by the woman who brought reading recovery to the United States. So the theory and the philosophy and the instructional practices of LLI, I think, are the best that we could have if we don't have reading recovery. And so being able to make that program as strong of an implementation as possible and continue that idea that we need to identify those kids early and give them the best intervention we can, I think it's the best thing that we can do.
Okay. Sad, but I do understand the requirements. I would hope that if we get to a juncture in the future at some point that we need to relook at that one-on-one intervention because, as you all know, it was pretty incredibly powerful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Item 8.03, award E-rate contract for district network upgrades. Ms. McGrath.
Hi, so back in February, you approved a plan so that we could move forward with bids in order to upgrade our networking systems, and we did receive two qualified bids, one from AMS and one from DecoTech. The network specialist and I reviewed those two bids, and we would like to recommend that AMS be awarded that. We do get a significant E-rate discount, if you remember from that equipment that is ordered, and this will allow us to continue with our network upgrade in order to improve Wi-Fi throughout our schools, and it is that very beginning step a little bit towards new phone systems that we will be likely recommending through Measure D efforts.
Okay. Went the wrong way. Anyone in the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
Unless there are questions, I'd like to move that we accept the bid.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Buckman to award the E-rate project number 03.61.15. C.2 to AMS in the net amount of $172,610.32. And a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 8.04, Declaration of Need for Fully Qualified Educators. Mrs.
Well, hello.
Newland.
So the Declaration of Need is filled out every year, and it's filled out as a preemptive measure, assuming that we are not going to find all of our educators to be fully qualified. And we're very lucky here in San Luis Obispo County to be right next to Cal Poly, and we're a very desirable district with high salaries, great working conditions, and so we attract wonderful educators in our district. However, at times we have to look to people that are not fully qualified. And that would occur, for example, if we are hiring mid-year and most teachers are under contract and therefore can't leave their district and the applicant pool is much smaller. So sometimes we'll have to look at people that are not as qualified. It will occur if we have part-time temporary positions. Maybe we have some LLI hourly positions that still require a teaching credential. That's a case of one of our teachers currently who was hired. She was a teacher of the year in another state, has an out-of-state credential, phenomenal educator hired under LLI, but didn't have a CLAD authorization, which is required in the state of California, and therefore had to get an emergency CLAD in order to get a 1-year credential in California, then has to clear that CLAD within, you know, the year. Currently, the educators that come out of Cal Poly have the CLAD, which is an authorization for English language learners, embedded within their credential. So it's no longer an issue for our teachers coming out of our teacher education programs. It's only an issue when people come from out of state, for example. And then also you will find that sometimes we need university interns. So you'll find that on the agenda even tonight under our personnel action, we have a university intern that's being approved. So somebody who taught at the community college level but doesn't happen to have a credential. In California, you can be a Nobel Peace Prize winner in physics, and if you don't have a physics teaching credential, you cannot teach physics. So that's just the way our state works. It's a license, just like a doctor has a license to practice in their field. A teacher has a credential to practice in theirs. So this would say that we anticipate not having all of our positions to be filled by fully qualified educators under those circumstances. So I hope that helps to explain.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who has something interesting to say? Okay, seeing no one. Mr. Unger.
Will this annual need change, given that highly qualified teachers, as defined by No Child Left Behind, is no longer required?
Well, the credentialing component
is still alive,
even though the No Child Left Behind accountability requirements are no longer in place, the credentialing still is.
Okay. I would move approval of item 8.04.
Mr. Buckman?
I'll second that, but I do have one other question for discussion.
Please.
So, Kristen, I did hear the discussion about the CLAD, and I just want to be sure that existing staff that is here now, we're fully CLAD certified. These are new people coming in.
These are new people that are coming from out of state, because when we have our full positions, like when we were applying, you know, hiring for elementary, for example, we received 150 applications. We didn't consider anyone that did not have a CLAD. But when we come across these part-time positions or mid-year positions, that applicant pool sometimes doesn't always have everybody in there that has a CLAD, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That also passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Mr. Robinette, the LCAP stakeholder feedback.
We're going to read all of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Mrs. Holmes. Well, tonight we begin the process tonight and over the next four meetings of presenting and adopting our annual local control accountability plan. This relatively new way of publicly adopting goals and action plans connected to revenues has come about with a variety of purposes. And first, it gives local boards of education great authority in deciding what is important and how we should spend discretionary dollars. In fact, you have more discretion than any other time in perhaps public education history in the state of California. But it does also was designed as a way of eliminating categorical funding and some of the accountability and strings attached to it, as this board well remembers. We used to get a pile of different categories of funds, and all of those funds had requirements as far as what we could do with the money and also reporting requirements. I mean, it took staff hours to report on. Sometimes we didn't even want to get categorical funds because the money would be spent on just accounting for how we're going to spend those funds more than the dollars were worth. And those were largely eliminated in the state of California. But third, and just as important, and I think it's important for us to remember, is that it is not an anything-goes plan. And I think sometimes people get confused about that when they hear about LCAP. The state still has priorities that must be included in the plan. They've outlined eight priorities, actually. And what are some of them? I'm not going through all eight of them, but these include adherence to Common Core standards and that move a district to prepare every student to be college and career ready. There is an assumption that we are going to work on Common Core standards as part of the LCAP. We have to be accountable in improvement in standardized measures. Even though NCLB has gone away and ESSA is here and the state is still figuring out what those accountability measures will be, make no mistake, we will be expected to show improvement. There will be some sort of API and annual progress and the need to report how we're doing and the expectation that we're going to be doing better and better. We must ensure that parents can participate in decision-making and partnering with our schools. That's an important component of the plan. We must track and improve issues surrounding absences and truancy, suspensions and expulsions. Those are one of the eight areas. And very importantly, the plan must address student groups that traditionally experience opportunity and achievement gaps in our systems. So foster homeless youth, EL students, and those who are socioeconomically disadvantaged must be part of the plan. I heard of a lawsuit that a school district is facing just today where a Latino advocacy group has come in and said, where are we in our plan? Yeah, it's a local plan. Yeah, everyone wanted this and people, but we're not in this. We're not mentioned here. There's nothing for EL students, which would be a very dangerous thing for us to do. So one of the things we do is we solicit feedback. And I'm not sure how we go about this is the best way. We are certainly opening to thinking about how to do this in the future. But we basically do a few things. We go to our staffs, and by making a brief presentation about our budget and existing priorities, and then we record reactions and ideas, and we give an anonymous survey to our staff that they can fill out at their leisure. We also do a similar thing with our defined parent groups, our district English language advisory group, our booster and PTA organizations, our Title I advisory group. Our superintendent spends a lot of time this time of year reaching out to a broad range of students at each of our secondary schools. All of these outreach efforts are very open-ended. We are essentially asking the question, how are we doing? What do we need to keep on doing? What should we be doing more of? And what should we stop doing? There are advantages to this methodology. It is open by design. It allows for creative thinking. It puts anything and everything on the table. But there are disadvantages, too, because it's often easier to actually get valid feedback when you give something specific and say, react to it. And we don't. We say, tell us how we're doing. Sometimes we get things that are appropriate to just a particular school site and wouldn't be necessarily appropriate for the entire district. Sometimes we get ideas that don't really belong in an LCAP document. They may be belonging in the purview of collective bargaining or some other faction of the school district. Some districts don't do it this way. They don't solicit feedback prior to writing the LCAP. They actually produce the LCAP and then go out and say, here's our ideas, react to them.
What do you think? So they're soliciting feedback, but they're soliciting feedback to a specific plan. And then they write how their stakeholders responded. So however we go about it, there are things that we need to be aware of when considering perception data. So last year at this time, in this room actually, I shared the classic Hindu story of the blind man and the elephant. And I won't do the full story again. But as you know, the moral is that if someone is asked to draw conclusions just based on their own limited experience, those conclusions are valid, but they might not be entirely accurate, and because one cannot really perceive the whole if they're just looking at a part. For example, you've probably seen this about, I think, 100 years now. The classic illusion, roughly half the population, when they look at that picture at first glance, see the profile of a young, sophisticated woman. Roughly half see a homely, older woman. Most people are able to see both of them with a little effort. About 5% of the population, no matter how hard they try, they cannot see both of those pictures within that. The point is that perception data is important. And we have heard the term perception is reality, and it's important. See, you're struggling. And all perception is valid from a particular point of view. But our job will be to use this perception data, couple it with board direction and board goals, statistical analysis on student achievement, and put it together into a plan.
I saw the old woman.
I'm going to get that picture off there before you get too sidetracked. Yeah. So what I've attempted to do is synthesize some trends and commonalities, items that seem to only emanate from one site or one group of people, may not really be district priorities, they may be, but trying to synthesize general feedback, because as you've seen in the board item, with all the surveys, all the responses, all the ideas, there's thousands of responses. It's really difficult to go through and say, okay, but so I'm trying to do a synthesis here. Mr. Unger.
I was just going to comment about your collection method. I thought we got a lot of good comments from the staff. It was interesting to see what the Title I parents considered priorities, what the District English Language Learner Group thought. The group that I was and the students, by the way, I thought the student responses were really, really good, and we did a phenomenal job on that. I was concerned about the number of parents that responded.
Not many.
The very low response rate from the number of parents. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that as we move into year four, that we can encourage more parents to give us that kind of feedback, because I think it's really important, and it shows us what they're thinking about the district and what's important. You know, some of it may or may not be germane to what we can actually plan with our LCAP, but it's like doing an opinion poll on mm-hmm. us. I would personally like to see us be able to reach out again in the business community and get their impressions of what we're doing here as well.
Thank you.
But particularly, I was hopeful that we would get more parent response and disappointed that we
didn't. Yeah, and we got it only from certain sectors, certain schools more than
exactly,
others.
Yeah. It seemed that absolutely that's true, too.
Which actually leads me to this point, you know, that all this feedback leads to choices. I mean, it's not mandates, it's choices. I mean, there are some district, some state priorities, but you have choices to make. And I really think that when it comes to choices, we have to ask ourselves some questions. Is this an LCAP thing, or does this belong somewhere else, as I mentioned before? Or is this something that we actually need to kind of investigate further? Maybe not spend resources on staff and program and professional development, but actually just put it on the table, spend some research sources on studying it. I think about the work that we did with the elementary report card years ago. That was just an idea. It was an idea of, should we start developing a standards-based report card? And instead of writing an LCAP plan that said, by such and such a date, we will adopt a report card, we basically said, let's investigate it. Let's get teachers. Let's get teachers from every school site. Let's get some expertise. Let's study the issue and decide whether we should go forward. And from that, we actually got a beautiful thing that was voted on by all the schools, and it just kind of came about. And I think that sometimes when we start reading ideas, they lead us to say, all right, let's put that on the table and spend some time with it as opposed to write an actual plan to do it. And then obviously there's things that come out that we go, wow, we need to spend money on that. And that this is something that should be in our plan. So I also want to add that tonight, this is just my analysis, and I take ownership. And if I'm giving some item short shrift, or you as a board having read this stuff, see these results differently, I apologize, and I'm glad you analyze things in your own, and you're ultimately going to be approving the plan. But I'm just going to basically talk about some general topics that came up from our different groups. And so let me start with the largest segment of our population and our results. I mean, not the largest segment of our population, but where we got a lot of feedback was from our staff. Now, I think our most honest feedback from our staff perhaps is given anonymously. It is very interesting how when we go to the sites and speak to the staff, we get some interesting reactions. And when we give the anonymous survey, we actually get different things sometimes from that same staff. So that's natural. I mean, I don't know who fills out surveys, if everyone fills them out or just disgruntled people fill them out, or if people are just not as willing to share openly among their peers. That makes sense to me. But I think we get a lot of feedback from our staff when it comes to that anonymous survey. What I can tell you, and especially after hearing the presentation, is that LLI, reading intervention, early intervention in reading, is very important to our staff. We got very positive comments both when we did our presentation, that teachers are happy that we've added more LLI hours. People seem to be overwhelmingly happy with the new reading curriculum we've adopted, even knowing it's going to be really difficult stuff, a lot of training involved in it. I think our staff is asking for more. They're looking for interventions in early literacy. Technology is a topic that came up in a lot of ways, and I think our staff is asking us to continue to support technology, support more one-on-one devices. And the most positive comments came about with the type of training that we've been given. I mean, even by name, our teacher on special assignment, Jennifer O'Hagan, and the type of things we're doing with Google Classroom and these academies and optional things that teachers can go to are very highly regarded. We made a big move this last year in our LCAP to move towards site-based autonomy, moving a lot of our professional development, assessment, scoring, things that we were doing away from a centralized district office focus and giving into the school sites, and that seemed to be positively received. And the idea that sites can determine some of their own interventions seems to be a positive direction from our staff. Instructional coaching is one of the most interesting ones. We've invested a lot in instructional coaching in our sites because we have it right now a model of a student-based coaching. You've had presentations on it where essentially at our sites we have a half-time intervention teacher, a half-time instructional coach. When Mr. Pinkerton and Ms. New and I go out and talk to the staff, people are saying, this is the best, this is so wonderful, we're so happy to have this. In the anonymous surveys, as you would see, it's probably the first thing on the cutting block. If we say, what should we cut? It's instructional coaching often, or teachers on special assignments at the district office. Sometimes those are blended. So there's definitely an appreciation of it, but I think also a recognition that if you're going to axe anything, that's where you should go among our staff. I think that'd be an honest assessment, at least from the surveys. Surprisingly, good comments about our math curriculum. Last year in last year's surveys, a lot of concerns about math and the difficulty of the math curriculum, the time it takes. I think if you look at the analysis and read it, you hear people feeling very positive about math at all levels. The Bridges curriculum, the number corner, the work that we've been doing at the elementary, middle, and high school, CPM, positive you receive. So the concerns, of course, are the time it takes to do that. And time, you'll see, comes up as a big staff concern. This was the only group that with any numbers mentioned counseling. And it was mentioned a lot. I think at every school site we went, teachers talked about the need for counseling, and if not more, at least keep things where they were, but certainly don't cut counseling. There was in our survey, the anonymous part of the staff survey, a lot of talk about counseling, and some of the comments kind of were not necessarily about academic counseling, but mental health support, mental health support types of counseling. That wasn't echoed in our parent information, largely, and wasn't echoed in the students. And Dr. Prater asked specific questions sometimes about counseling and didn't get students saying, no, we don't need more. So it's an interesting thing, but our staff feels it and recognizes it and believes that, I think if you were honestly looking at the survey, that this is a need in our district.
Rick, if I may jump in. This part of this discussion came up earlier tonight. So counseling has two meanings. And we've heard from staff in the past very strongly about the need for counseling of the mental health support variety.
Right.
And so is that the same that you're seeing reflected here rather than academic counseling?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be, the sense I have is that's really what people are asking for, is counseling to support students, not counseling to support students' academics or college aspirations or schedules or things like that. And it's seen it. We're getting that feedback at all levels.
And is it, in your opinion, are we getting the comments from staff about counseling and mental health services because it's the teachers in the classroom that see the behaviors, the need, the problems?
I don't know.
No. I just, you know, when this discussion has come up in the past, it almost feels like there's an expectation of on-site mental health services at all of our sites, which I think would be great.
But is it our mission?
Yeah. And if it isn't our mission, how much of our general fund do we divert to that? But at any rate, that's a conversation.
And it's an interesting thing, too. And, you know, Dr. Prater may want to comment and want this, even this part of this dialogue, because you've read the feedback, to be as open. And so I appreciate, you know, the questions. Is that you would think it would come from our students, too. And it came from one particular student group at San Luis Obispo High School, but across the board, virtually nowhere else. And so it's just an interesting phenomenon that that it's certainly a staff recognition.
Well,
I know your light's on, but I just want to follow up on this one point, Chris, if I can. It's interesting that it came from San Luis High School, and the timing of it coincided with, I think, at least one or two incidents at San Luis. So, I mean, there was a heightened perception. And
sure.
I'm not sure that there was that perception's out there among students, that unless they were asked one-on-one. Thanks for your art, Chris.
Well, I was going to say that I don't think we absolutely can't compare ourselves to school districts in Southern California, Compton most specifically, but there was a lawsuit, and I believe Compton is in the process of settling that lawsuit, which is going to require them to address essentially community-wide trauma. Mm. And do trauma-informed instruction and things like that. So that sense that do we own kids' mental health needs, things that they've brought to the schools with them, I think that we will be seeing the answer is yes, we're going to need to start addressing those in more than specifically targeted interventions, but school-wide. Huh.
Any other comments? Shall I continue?
Please.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Buckman?
Okay. I think that not a lot of kind of really negative comments about assessment, at least compared to a year ago. I mean, I think that what we have are teachers who seem to be satisfied with the level of assessment. The BAS test at the elementary school is kind of revered by our elementary staff. But the problems in administering it are absolutely problems. They take time. It takes substitute time or teacher time. And so those comments came up, and we expected those comments to come up about especially that particular assessment. Professional development, there were just suggestions that ran the gamut. We need more of it. We need less of it. We need it centralized. We need it here at the site. I think there were interesting things about creative solutions that we have begun looking at, like webinars and different ways of delivering PD that don't require substitutes or pullouts or teachers away from classrooms. So it's something for us to look at.
Well, if I may, I think that's given that we just approved the next generation science standards, and that's going to require tremendous professional development. We're going to absolutely have to be looking at this again and our methods of delivery, whatever, but it is going to be huge.
Sure.
And we've been talking about that for, I think, at least 2 years now.
Sure. And then I'm going to put these next four up kind of together. Combination classes, prep time, class size, workload, largely comments from our elementary schools. And honestly, these are issues and ideas that are probably not going to be addressed in the LCAP, probably not appropriate. But they are about working conditions. They are the purview, usually, of collective bargaining agreements, and they are certainly being talked about at the table. But let's be clear, the demands of Common Core, of differentiating instruction for a wide range of students, preparing for very sophisticated and rigorous instruction, has our teachers working harder than ever before, at least in my experience. I have seen it. And so we need to be cognizant, if nothing else, we need to be cognizant of the impacts of our decisions within the LCAP and how they may impact those very things. And so if you would look at the survey results of anonymous surveys of the teachers and the stuff that we got going out to the sites, those topics came up over and over and over again. And they're all really workload topics. They're topics of how hard it is to do what we're doing. And I don't apologize for how hard it is we do what we're doing. I think we're on the right track personally, but it's hard. It's demanding on our teachers. Let me move to the parent group. This is a much smaller sample size this year, as Mr. Unger suggested. I actually think some of the very best input we get comes from our District English Language Advisory Committee, and the reason I say it is because they really take seriously this idea. I mean, it's a major agenda item. They want to talk about it and share about it. They come to the district meeting to talk about the LCAP. And so unlike some other groups where it's like an agenda item, maybe I'll throw some input or maybe I'll fill out a survey, as we saw, we didn't get a lot of input. The DLAC takes it very seriously. With a small sample size, it's hard to synthesize data. It's really hard to say, okay, here are the big ideas. What I can say is that, again, speaking especially with our DLAC group, is that there seems to be a lot of gratitude. It was really heartening to me to have at the meeting our one of the former presidents of the DLAC say, just delineate, we're really thankful that you added extra transportation. We're really thankful that we have an after-school middle school sports program. We're really thankful that we have these after-school classes for us. We're really thankful about the effort you got into put into summer school and your LCAP. It's like, wow. You know, it's like someone's paid attention to it and said, you've addressed the things we've asked for. And so the sense is that I get from our parent group is that we're in a positive direction. We did have parents talking about both DLAC and our DTAC group and in the surveys about technology. Favorable, you know, bring it on, good stuff, but there are absolutely concerns about areas like digital literacy and cyberbullying and the impacts of social media, the impacts of students just being plugged into devices, and concerns about that. And so I think that we probably need to pay attention to that. Parents are seeing it. Parents are recognizing it. We have to also recognize, and Mr. Buckman and I have talked about it, there is still a digital divide. We have students who don't have access to internet at home, and that's a consideration we have to think about as we become a more technologically a fixed type of organization. We also had comments, especially in the anonymous survey, about making sure that we support all learners. I mean, there were parents commenting about, well, let's make sure we don't pay so much attention to EL students or socioeconomically disadvantaged students that we forget that we have all kinds of students in the school district, and we have gifted and accelerated students that need attention. And so those comments were there. But not a lot of parent feedback that I could say, here's a real consensus idea coming from that group. We did get a lot of good information from our students, though. And so let's take a look at our student feedback. Dr. Prater spent a considerable amount of time with a large group of students of all types, social strata, demographics, achievement levels. This was not our, you know, let's just pull our leadership kids in and talk to them. Our school cultures are very different at each school. It's very apparent. So I tried to pull out some threads that are common of all. And my little aside is here that the most recent episode of This American Life, the one that episode 449, if you want to get it on your you know, iPads or whatever you get your This American Life is on middle school. The whole episode is on middle school, and it was fascinating because it just really talked about how that might be the only group of students that you're really going to get truly honest feedback from. There's actually a psychologist talking about younger students not really being able to articulate well what's kind of going on in their cerebral cortex, and high school students already being too jaded or too influenced by other things to actually be objective. But middle school kids, they'll just, there's no filter. They'll just tell you what's going on. And we did get good feedback from our middle school kids. If you look at the survey that was given, there was a Likert scale survey where students were asked to rank on a scale of strongly disagreeing to strongly agreeing. All of the results that had to do with adults on campus and with accessibility to help were very positive in these areas. So we are obviously doing something right in our secondary schools when it comes to just students accessing adults, getting the help they need, having caring teachers, administrators, counselors, support staff. Students seem to be very positive about extracurricular and after-school programs in our schools. I think what you view is students saying in groups that there's very little bullying reported at schools. Students were careful to notice, though, that we have to continue to pay attention to the issues of bullying, the issues of tolerance, issues of stratification that goes on in our schools. I think if you look at, I'm just sharing perception data, but if you look at our Healthy Kids survey, you would concur that we just cannot take our eye off the ball of issues of tolerance and bullying, and It's just a function of what we have to pay attention to in our LCAP or in our school system. Students talked a lot about homework this year, so there's a lot of complaining about homework loads, and maybe that's what students have always done. But I actually wonder if there's a degree of overstressing of homework that is taking place. It's one of those things that maybe we should study that. I wonder. There are entire countries with highly successful school systems. I've had a lot of exchange students come in at my house, and they say, "Oh yeah, we love school. It's great. It's not that different from home, except what's this idea with homework?" They don't have homework where I come from. We work all day at school. We have to come and work at night. And so we may need to study this, because it came up a lot among student groups that the homework load seemed to be stressing them. Just like parents, students have also reported similar desires regarding technology. They need their hands on more of it. But they're also themselves wary of plugging in too much. And we heard that those comments come from kids, and are very cognizant of some of the social media issues that can create firestorms on a campus. And that's what I captured. So what next? The team over there is probably not even paying attention, because they're working on the LCAP based on all this stuff, because we're trying to get this all ready to present to the board in the next 2 weeks. But at the next board meeting, we will present some of the big ideas we are suggesting for the board for next year's plan. And that's my synthesis. But at this point, obviously, I'm available for questions, and also a good opportunity for you to share any perceptions you might have had in looking at the data. So.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. This was just an amazing effort. My guess is if we looked at other school districts in the state, we're putting in a whole lot more time and effort into trying to do the real spirit of the LCAP. I really appreciate everything staff's doing. In my quick read of it, and I'm sure it wasn't as deep as yours, Rick, it seemed to come up, and it seemed to be a balance in several of the schools, mostly at the high schools, staff and administration know everybody's name. And then two bullets down, I would say, staff and especially administrations don't know our names. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's big enough to look into or whatever. It just seems strange that there's a group here that says I'm known. Mm-hmm. And a group here that says I'm not known.
I think honestly, and Dr. Prey, you can comment, there are a couple of our schools where students said, yeah, it's the administration, they're great, they're out, they're in my classroom, I see them a lot, but I don't think they know who I am. And there are other schools, secondary schools, where that was certainly not the case, where they would say, yeah, they know everyone, they all know my name, they call me by my name. So absolutely something to think about, especially given the fact that even our secondary schools are small. They're small schools. And so it's not that hard to know everyone's name at a middle school, for example. Dr. Prater, you had a comment about that?
It was very insightful, Mr. Bachman, that you pull that up, because we heard that in a recurring way. But what's interesting is we tended to see it in the middle group and in the lower socioeconomically disadvantaged or the economically disadvantaged subgroups that we were speaking with, where the perception of the students, it was almost as if they saw themselves as invisible. While the adults were present, they didn't sense engagement from the adults. They felt safe at the school. They felt reassured that the adults were there. But they were not convinced that there was a relationship. And that was the aha for me, and I think the work will do. I think you'll see this as an evolution, that now what we recognize is just being present isn't enough, that you have to, quite frankly, we adults must engage. And I'm a stickler on this. I think it's important to know kids' names, and especially those students that tend to be quiet and unassuming. They oftentimes have a whole lot to say if you give them a chance. And so that's what I discovered when I was out and about. And I think this is a great reason why talking with students is so important. And it's something that we'll work on in the coming years. It's a fun part of our job, I think, to address it, analyze it, and then act.
Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers, and then Mr. Questenberry.
I would love it if the board could address the homework issue. If we had more time to investigate that further in terms of, as you mentioned, how the rest of the world is handling that. Many of us have seen that movie, Where to Invade Next, and we might be taking a cue from Michael Moore. But I suspect it is also linked to the mental health issue. I feel that, especially our high school students, have so much homework to prepare for the courses, therefore, that they have very little time to relax and de-stress. And I think that there's definitely a linkage there. So I hope at some point we do have a chance to investigate both of those issues further.
Mr. Buckman. I beg your pardon. Mr. Questberry.
Thank you. I'm just wondering out loud about counseling, which comes up repeatedly both in elementary and secondary. And I think one of my questions is, and so much of it from the staff, as you say, we have talked about it, but I think it's something we might want to revisit, is how we are trying to coordinate the counseling at the high school with community resources.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting because we have Bella here and she talks about all that's going on at San Luis High with regard to mental health issues and so forth. I think that's really very, very beneficial. I'm a little disappointed I don't hear much of Morro Bay about it, but like you said, there have been several incidents at San Luis High where it may be more on their mind and more topical. But I just don't know that teachers at the elementary level especially don't see how community resources have been utilized to help them with the issues that that students can have and families can have at that level. So that's just it's just kind of my sense is that people don't know and don't understand.
Mr. Unger.
Well, I want to thank you guys for the work that you did and the efforts that you put into this. It was gargantuan. Especially, I know Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and I, and actually Mrs. Roger, had a chance to see some of the engagement you did at Morro Bay High School, and then Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and I got to see what you were doing at San Luis High School with the students. And I felt like you got some really good feedback from them. I appreciated the way that you looked at different groups to target. So you weren't just targeting hand-picked students from the school sites who would give us the answers that we thought we would like to hear. And I also thought it was great that you did anonymous surveys prior to your focus groups. So I want to thank you for that. I also want to thank everybody who participated, all the staff people who gave us feedback. Anonymously or in the group meetings, because it helps, I think, us as a board understand the temperature of the district and understand what's important to people.
Yep.
I think it's important to remind folks that this is not a wholesale revision of the LCAP this year.
Right.
And our expectations are we've embarked on this LCAP 2 years ago. We will be looking at revisions for next year, probably nothing substantive based on what we launched it with 2 years ago, but that the following year in 2017 is when we'll really look at a new revision for a new three-year cycle, and it probably will correlate with the new state accountability standards as well. So I'm going to ask people, if there's anybody watching this, to really think about this and engage with us next year and continue to engage with us as a district.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing is, you know, in the LCAP itself, the templates, the guidance, everything, it keeps evolving. So every year it's a little different. And it really is sort of a three-year cycle. And originally it was like a three-year cycle and then create a new one. Now it appears like it's more of a continual three-year cycles. You don't have to like do it for 3 years and then rewrite a whole new plan. But I think you're absolutely right. As we get more information about accountability, that'll have to be infused. Because right now we're flying by the seat of our pants with state accountability. We're writing goals and expectations because that's important to us, especially with our achievement gap, our gap kids. But as we get more information, it'll have to become a larger part of this plan.
Yeah. Well, fortunately. We started out with the initiatives. So we used the initiatives as our baseline for writing our LCAP. So I think we were ahead of the game for other districts.
Definitely.
I hope that as you write the LCAP, we don't do what some other districts seem to have done, which is to make them more and more complicated and longer and less easy to understand, because this is a public document and we want our teachers, we want our students to understand what it is that we're aiming for and what our goals are and what our goals are for them and their communities. So as you write that, I hope that you'll keep that in mind and consider that. And again, just thanks to you guys for the yeoman's work that everybody did and is doing on this.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no additional comments, we thank you, Mr. Robinette, and we'll move on.
I'll stay up here for this next one.
Oh, okay. Let's see.
I think this one will be very easy, hopefully.
This is proposed revision to board policy 5123.
You can't have a meeting without I don't bring a board policy to you. This is actually one that probably should have been changed a while ago. We thought we had gone through and checked out everything that had mention of the California High School Exit Exam, but we actually had it in our promotion, acceleration, and retention policy. So the only revision here that we're asking is because there is no CASI and doesn't seem to be anything on the horizon just yet, to replace it, it is our recommendation that we just take out the paragraph that refers to the CASI exam, since it makes no sense at this point.
OK, Okay, is there anyone in the public that wishes to speak to this proposed board policy revision? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back.
My life worked. I would move approval.
Mrs. Sheffer.
I would like to move approval of item 8.06.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Questenberry. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Before we move on, I just want to point out that, and we haven't gotten here yet, but included in our agenda is our revisions of the administrative regulations. And I would like to point out that exclusions from attendance in item number on page 2, item number 6, we're eliminating have filthy or vicious habits, and that was an amazing thing to have in administrative regulations, and I'm really glad we're getting rid of it.
Okay, duly noted, Mr. Unger. We're on the action consent agenda. Item 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, acceptance of donations. 9.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.04, approval of purchase orders. 9.05, approval of foreign exchange organization.
I'll move approval of items 9.03 through
9.05.
I have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously. Approval of certificated and classified personnel items, Mr. Questenberry.
Yes, I just want to note that the retirement of Kathy Bueller-Lipsey, and I wanted to commend her for years of service to the district, both as a colleague when she was a PE teacher at Morrowbay High School and at other sites, as a vice principal, and as an interim principal at Morrowbay High School. So I just wanted to recognize her before we moved on. And having thus done so, I move approval of item 9.01.
Okay, motion by Mr. Questenberry then and second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Item 9.02, acceptance of donations. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I would just like to give a little shout out to PG&E's campaign for community. This is an ongoing project that they do with our community and matching funds that their employees have donated to our schools, and I mean it's a sizable amount when everyone shares the burden, and so I just want to appreciate that and send them our thanks and recommend approval of item number 9.02.
And I would second that with a comment. I wanted to thank the Hinson family for its donation of a book to the Bishop's Peak Library.
Yes.
Okay. So we have now regarding item 9.02, we have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Oh, I beg your pardon. Well, you probably thought it, Walter. So we have that passed unanimously. Do we have any reports by board members?
Just
Mr. Buckman.
Oh, thank you. Anybody in the public?
No, sorry.
I did get to, I don't know if I reported on this last time. I went to the LCAP Pacheco with Rick Robinette and did report it, and it was very good. I did get to visit C.L. Smith with... Would you all raise Catherine, Marilyn, and Ellen? Is it that? And Jim.
Not me.
And Jim. Catherine. And Jim. And it was just great. One of the exciting things for me was that I wouldn't have gotten in as much trouble if the chairs now have not gliders, but they have like a little almost tennis ball on the bottom, so you can't rock back and you can get a little action and you're not so wiggly. But you anyway, so the furniture was interesting. There was desks that you could write on and wipe off like a whiteboard. Some interesting programs, but the most interesting that
so
I thought.
So, are you saying they're trying out some of the proposed furniture for Measure
there's
B?
There's at least two classrooms that we saw that were very exciting. Thank you, Marilyn. And but for me, they're handing out. You know, I saw you do something good, and you get it, and it's something that you can save up. Then you can go to an on-site little store with pencils and erasers, and then you can purchase something, or you can save your money and purchase something more, or you can really save your money and go to lunch with the principal. And kids are sort of, you know, working on bank mergers, and it just is something that we've heard from the public about teaching kids how to understand money and balance their checkbooks, and here it is at an elementary site. So I was pretty excited about that.
God bless you.
Excuse me.
God bless you.
Dr. Eisenbrath.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying God bless you.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, just to prolong the meeting for another 20 minutes. No, I just wanted to say that I thoroughly enjoyed going to C.L. Smith, at probably one of our most diverse schools. And the exciting things that are going in the classroom, we got a wonderful greeting from a young lady, I believe was fifth grade, came in, introduced herself, introduced the class. A young man in the special day class, you know, greeted us as we came in the door. And so there was just one, many, many wonderful moments, and it made me question about my decision over 40 years ago to go into secondary education. Boy, those kids just, it's not too late. You're right. It's not too late. But it's a very wonderful, enthusiastic place. Kids were engaged in every classroom we're in, and I'm so pleased that they're going to get a new makeover. The principal's excited. I just have a question. Where does all that old playground equipment go? It's just a question. No one has to answer it for me tonight. But anyway, I really thoroughly enjoyed C.L. Smith.
Okay, are there any other Mr. Unger?
Well, first of all, I was in Boston for the National School Board Conference, and I just wanted to say that it was a cool thing to do, but Frank Pugh, who is a school board member from Santa Rosa City Schools, is in line to be the NSBA president, so we have some representation from California back on the national level. Frank's a great guy. He actually saved CSBA, and so we owe him a great debt. Along with Mr. Buckman, we went to the Morro Bay High School band concert, and it was great. And I think one of the things that was really, really nice about it was that the guest conductor, as he was speaking to the audience about the music he wrote, really gave kudos to the district for its support of the arts and said, I think he said that this was the first concerts that he's ever done that three administrators from the district had actually been at the concert. So it was really a nice affirmation of what we're doing. And then also Dr. Eisenbrath Rogers, Mr. Buckman, and I all were at San Luis High School for Tiger Fest, which was really fun. It was a great experience. And then I had a really interesting conversation with a guy named John Elfers, who's a former COE employee. And he shared some very interesting and eye-opening information about countywide LGBT students. And I think we'll probably be needing to talk about that at some point.
Okay, thank you. If there are no additional board reports, then this meeting is adjourned.